Marvin Moot is the president of the Rainforest Reptile Refuge Society, and Paul Springate is the curator of the Society's Animal Shelter in Surrey. Welcome to you both.
Hi, Marge.
It's great to have you here. Now, let's we'll have to assume our audience doesn't know anything about the society, so maybe, Marvin, you wouldn't mind giving us a little background information, a little bit of history, and maybe tell us the mission of the Society.
Well, Marge, the Society started out as an animal shelter by a couple who were concerned about the numbers of abandoned and neglected reptiles in the community, and they quickly filled their apartment and moved to our present location. We're in Surrey, and but even our present facilities filled up rather quickly, and we realized that we cannot shelter all the animals in that are out there. So we now our big focus is education, and we do a lot of school tours. We do provide a home for over 300 reptiles. And those animals are part of our educational programming.
Wow, that's really impressive. 300 is a lot of reptiles.
Yeah, well, we could have thousands, I'd say. Hey, Paul?
Absolutely.
And that it's a constant demand, I'm sure, to bring more in. And so we'll talk a little bit about that. But first of all, maybe Paul, since he's the curator and probably works a lot right in the shelter, could tell us, give us a little description of what the shelter is.
Well, basically, we try to hone a little bit on the animal instincts. We don't just throw them in boxes and say, okay, well, here they are, come take a look at them. Our aim is to be able to show people that there's a little bit more involved than just, you know, feeding and cleaning up after them. You have to try and use a bit of anything you can find to recreate their natural habitat. Snakes that climb, you want them in a cage with trees. Crocodilians, I mean, you want them somewhere where they can spend a lot of time in the water as well as basking under a sun lamp. It's hard, you know. You see tens of thousands of animals out there, and only a few of the lucky ones get to become part of what I call the family. And it is a lot of work. I mean, it's day in, day out, 7 days a week. You're making sure that animals' needs are taken care of.
Do you have a large staff?
No. It's one of the things that comes with volunteering. It's very hard to find dedicated individuals that really want to spend the time. I think that in today's economy, people need to be making money and not volunteering all the time. But I can't believe for one second that there's not people out there undying to be able to help wildlife. Even though here in Vancouver, we call them exotics. They're just wildlife from somewhere else.
Yes, and you have a lot of really dedicated volunteers, I understand.
The refuge is pretty much 100% volunteer run. I mean, Paul gets some living expenses, but the whole thing is run by volunteers, and it's an incredible opportunity to work with animals that you would not have the opportunity to spend time with. So it's a real privilege, yeah.
It's not a student group at the university, perhaps, who would like some field work experience?
We do have individuals who are working on projects and students from high schools, all sorts of different kind of people become involved, yes.
I see. And are you open to the public?
On the weekends.
I see.
Actually,
I see.
Do a lot of educational tours during the week for all sorts of school groups, private groups, you name it. And we go like Tuesday through Friday where we bring people in. We give them an hour where we really concentrate on all the problems. We take them around and give as much as we can in that hour and let people see the animals, talk a bit about them. They learn about the problem. A lot of people walk in expecting like a typical zoo to just look at animals. I think that people really walk out of there with a lot more than they thought they were going to get when they walked in.
It's truly a shelter for animals, isn't it? It's not an entertainment center. It's
no.
An education center. If it's
absolutely, 100%. I mean, that's what we are. It's education and awareness. I don't know how great a benefit it is to the animals to be stared at by people every day, but that's the only way we're going to teach people. You have literally thousands of kids that go to a pet store and want the corn snake in the window or the python or not knowing anything about it, and they buy them as a novelty. And so what we're trying to do is battle that at a lower age level, at the children, to teach them that these are wild animals. Keeping snakes in Rubbermaid containers is of no benefit to the snake. It's nothing more than just a shallow existence for the animal. Whereas the animals that we have, I call it a sanctuary. We call it a sanctuary where they're left alone. We don't typically pull them out and handle them and show them off and take them around.
Are they all reptiles that you have?
Pretty much. We also have a couple amphibians, but typically, I would say probably a good 85% are reptiles.
The first animal that you see when you come in is a sulcata tortoise, which someone probably bought, and it was the size of
Spud.
A small plate, and
or a potato.
this animal really should be roaming across the plains of Africa, and it will grow to it'll live for up to 100 years.
Third largest species in the world of tortoise, largest from Africa.
And it'll in diameter, its shell will measure over a meter once it becomes full grown. It's 7 years right now.
It's really sad because you take an animal like Spud, he's in a cage. Whereas this animal roams the deserts, like you said, Marvin, is vast, arid regions. But yet, as much as we can give him, I mean, we still have him in a cage. We're actually presently building this guy a pretty darn large tortoise cage. One of the big issues with this tortoise is that you're supposed to keep them outdoors. Well, then why are they in Canada? You can't keep a tortoise outdoors here in these months. Mm-hmm. And therefore, it tends to work against the animal system. He's a young, growing male and needs to roam. So oftentimes, he has the run of the refuge when nobody else is around. It's myself running around in snake cages and Spud running around looking at all the other animals.
What would his temperature, what should his temperature be?
Oh, in the mid-80s.
Mid-80s?
Yeah. Pretty much the equator of Africa. You've got to keep it very warm. Oftentimes, one of the big problems with health risks with these animals, I mean, for the animals themselves, people have them in their home and they have a spot lamp on them. Well, that's not really what we call atmospheric temperature. It makes a big difference. Our refuge is, I mean, our heat is cranked all the time.
We get up to 30 degrees. By mid-afternoon, we're at about 30 degrees at least, because the animals, they cannot metabolize their food unless they're kept that warm.
But as hard as you try, you cannot make it a natural setting for those creatures, can you?
I think we could reach something like that, but that we're talking millions of dollars. We're talking like a real massive establishment, something that, I mean, you see a lot of zoos put tens of thousands of dollars. One of the realistic sizes being a society, we need the support of the community. We do have an incredible backbone supporter group like our donors. I mean, I'd love to actually take a moment just to thank them. I can wrestle snakes and deal with crocodiles until I'm blue in the face, but without the donor support, we wouldn't be going anywhere. But it's hard to expand. That's what we're always looking at is to move forward and grow. And the main focus of that is for the animals. The public's demand, I mean, the public's expectations are, I mean, I'm blown away on a regular basis, daily, by the amount of animals that are called in. It's something that I would really love to share with the public, is to know that being in a refuge where you are dealing with these animals, you've got a few hundred of them and you're running around like a madman looking after them all day, but the phone calls never stop. I would have thought a few years ago that maybe, you know, you'd get the phone call here and there and maybe, you know, once a week. No, it's more like 2-3 times a day. And most of our phone calls are probably asking us to take reptiles. People like to say, can they donate their iguana? Whereas we don't really look at them as a donation.
People,
this is a responsibility.
People call us up and they almost think that we're some kind of government agency. And they have a lot of expectations, and they're really, we get over 2, maybe 3,000 calls a year for people wanting to give us their animal or donate their animal. And this is an animal that's sort of been circulated between family members and friends, and maybe the landlord's got it now or something like that.
You don't get any cooperation, I mean financial cooperation, from governments, huh? Or do you?
Our support comes from individual donors. We have no government support. We don't have contracts like the SPCA.
Mm-hmm. I see.
But we are actually often called in to be able to deal with these animals. The SPCA holds an animal control contract. However, they don't have any facilities to accommodate reptiles. And oftentimes when dealing take a moment to say dangerous reptiles. I mean, they're not the majority. The majority are the small ones that people think, it's not a big deal if it's a little snake. Well, that snake's from Africa and it shouldn't be here, I think, is a big deal.
Paul was recently called in by the RCMP into East Vancouver. You may want to talk about that, Paul.
Yeah, bit of an emotional thing for me. In the middle of the night, I was given a call and was police escorted downtown to East Vancouver to wrestle a 7-foot crocodilian out of a crack house. Well, when I got there, there's this poor little animal. Well, what was funny is all the police and everybody wants to hear about the crocodile hunter type stories. Oh, wow, it's great. I walk into this house and I'm told not to touch anything, and they open the door, and this 6.5-foot tall, heavy weighted police officer jumped out of his skin. I look down and I see this poor little baby. This is like a maybe 3 or 4 year old animal, maybe 5 years, about 4 feet long, a caiman, which is a type of crocodilian, much like an alligator or crocodile, but they're from South America. And it was scared to death. It ran and went straight into the wall. Had no food, very little water in the tank, nothing in the... I mean, it's on a hardwood floor. This is not where crocodilians live. They live in mud where they feel it between their toes. They slide into water. They swim. They catch fish. They contribute to the ecosystems. When I was told to grab this croc, I had to wait for them to say, okay, is it a goat, you know? Are you going to do it? Do you need help? And I said, you know what? This animal looks like it's dying. Its backbone was showing, and that was something that really hit hard on me. I've never seen that. This animal is starving to death. Yeah, you know, you walk into a situation like that, and you think, you know, it becomes a media story about, oh, there's a crocodile in a house, and ooh, scary. What I felt was this poor animal has been treated like hell all its life. It doesn't know what's going on. It was scared to death, and it hardly fought back. A croc should be turning around trying to bite your hands off. I mean, that would be healthy. All this croc did was close its eyes and tense up and just not move. And I picked it up under my arm, carried it out. And one of the most difficult parts of that was that we ended up with the animal. We have a number of crocodilians, and I'll tell you, we really can't keep taking them. These animals get big. They're told they sell them in pet stores is under a foot long. Cute little babies, and they lie to people. One of the biggest lies in the pet trade, I think, that exists was probably about 100 years ago when somebody said, you know what, we can sell anything if we just tell people. It'll only grow as big as its enclosure. I don't think there's an animal on Earth that grows the size of its enclosure. I think that hinders a lot of growth problems and promotes disease. But this animal, we ended up with this croc. And I specifically outlined to the RCMP, I can help you remove it, but we can't take it. You know, we have so many of them, and right now we're presently trying to build our caiman an incredible home, which I hope will be done soon. It's never soon enough. I mean, some of our caimans are exceeding 8 and 9 feet in length. I mean, they're getting big. And these are sold to people as house pets. A crocodilian that weighs 500 pounds that can rip a man's body apart, it's nuts.
We have about,
24 caimans we actually have 4 of 6 species of caiman, but of course in the pet trade they're just called spectacled caiman, which is inaccurate. There's only 3 of 6 species that would hold that name due to a bony ridge between the eyes that makes it look like spectacles, or what we call glasses now.
And it's not like we're collecting these animals. I mean, we would like nothing more than to send them back to the Amazon, you know, or Central America, wherever they come from, but...
Three days ago, we had a foot-long croc brought to our back door. Right after there was actually an ad in the buy and sell for an American alligator in Langley, which I had a little bit of a problem with after a pit bull, an ex-pit bull owner. I guess this fellow really liked dogs, and he really loved his pit bulls. I can understand that. You know, they have a really bad reputation, but I believe strongly that most of the time it's how they're treated. Dogs don't just turn around and rip kids apart for no reason. Much like people. I mean, you know, they end up in bad places because of how they're treated or you know. But this animal came to us. It's this little baby croc, and we're expected to take it. We got no money with it, but here it is. They can't, that's right, dumped. They can't facilitate it. They said, well, we don't want it to die, so we brought it to you. But, you know, we don't have a football-sized field crocodilian farm.
So what do you do in a case like that? Do you just say no and that's that? Or
you know, Marge, the hardest thing is looking into an animal's eyes, knowing that if you don't take it, it'll probably end up dead.
I can imagine. Yeah.
Our policy is that we are not able to take any more animals. We do have over 300, and we're trying to do a really good job with the animals we have. And we just have limited resources, but animals do show up. We do get calls from Ministry of Children and Families. We get calls from the RCMP and
apartment managers that the snake got left behind, and they don't have to do. The SPCA will literally call us up once a week with a snake that was found, because whoever, of course, if we don't take it, they just think very clever. What's very interesting is some of the people that have these animals, venomous snakes and crocodilians, are found in crack houses, and everybody buying snakes, well, why are they all showing up loose? And I hear stories. I mean, going out and people find out who I am and what I do, they're telling, oh, I used to have a boa constrictor, but it got away.
Yeah.
And I can't believe how many animals are on the loose. I mean, this is a real problem.
Do you find a lot of, or have a lot of abandoned animals brought to you?
Oh, absolutely.
That may be found in parks?
Absolutely, absolutely. And on that note, we actually, this summer, had two corn snakes left in our driveway with a note expecting us to take them, saying, well, we know you'll take good care of them, but they left them in our driveway. Mm-hmm. That's not healthy. And iguanas, one day when I went out for supplies and came back in a couple hours, or I believe it was actually Marvin here that found them, there was a cat cab with two iguanas. Sometimes people think they're doing the good thing by rescuing animals. What I want people to realize about animal rescue is it is a profession. It's not a hobby. You can't go out and you can't just go. I mean, helping wildlife and bringing it to the right people is good. I don't want to take away from that. But you get a lot of people going, oh, but we felt so bad, and they get the animal and then they bring it to me, and there's no solution. And it gets to be where the problem is getting worse. You have people who their heart goes out and they bring home all these animals in private shelters on the residential road. But elderly women that don't know anything about crocs and pythons should not be bringing them home, whether they feel bad for them or not. That's why I think it's time that in this country, if we have such a problem with this, that maybe it's time that we evolve something like this refuge center into an educational center, into a government-funded operation, because
absolutely,
when you've got tortoises that live over 100 years that are all over Vancouver, well, and they keep showing up, well, what are we going to do? Just keep killing them? I don't think that's a solution.
Why did you guys start up? I mean, there's no solution otherwise. I mean, you saw a problem, and you created this shelter, and there's no other.
That's right. It's
well,
the only.
You better ask for some money from the government if it's that kind of a job.
You know, if they were listening, yes. Can we have some? You know, I mean, it is really hard. We're expected to take all these animals and do everything and be used by the police and the SPCA.
Amazing.
But yet, they're not paying us. I mean, you know, can I get paid to come and wrestle crocodiles in the middle of the night, please?
And I think we need to also talk about where these animals come from. You know, in the past few years, there's been an increase in the number of reptiles coming into Canada because there's new limits on bringing wild-caught birds in, and so reptiles have become a bit of a mainstay in the pet trade. They're the income earners.
And anybody out there, if you're listening, ask, or how many of you know people that have an exotic pet, a parrot or a monkey? I mean, even for, let's shoot really high. People have lions, people have tigers, people have monkeys, people have all sorts of animals. The pet trade here is getting really bad. What I've recently been saying to people is without legislation passed, we basically have our front doors wide open to the black market, and we're allowing it. We have countries like Australia that says that reptilia is protected. It's a very, very strict limiting on the export of any animals out of Australia. Yet we have tens of thousands of bearded dragons showing up in just about every pet store across Canada.
So with legislation, is that part of the answer? I don't think there's
I
a
would
whole
say
answer
that's,
with
it's
all of these that we have already in the country. But
it would definitely be a major first step. I think it's baby steps are what we're doing. We're teaching people, we're teaching children, and sitting here talking to the public right now. But until these guys are not allowed to sell crocodiles and pythons that, you know, I mean, we have the largest snake in the country in our facility. This is a reticulated python. For anybody out there who doesn't know what that is, they're the longest snakes in the world. In Indonesia, they're known as the jungle snake. And if you ask anybody in Indonesia what they're known for, they say, eat people.
They're very aggressive, and it's interesting. I met a woman who works in the pet trade, and she said, yeah, and you know what they're doing now is they have a hybrid out, and they're called mini retics because the retics get so big, you know, it's inconvenient to keep in your home, but now you can buy yourself a smaller version.
They call them dwarfs, but you never know what you're going to get.
But these are by nature very aggressive animals. We're just rolling our eyes on that one.
Which makes me wonder how Paul makes out, because you're the kind of the main key in this refuge, aren't you, as far as the hands-on?
Well, I look at this as a sacrifice on the animal's behalf. They're looked at by people every day, which, of course, I doubt any single one of them wants to be. I think it's really hard on the animals being in captivity. To anywhere in the world, I think that most zoological practice would agree with me. I mean, you're constantly trying to figure out a way to make their lives easier, make it a little more comfortable, because they can't leave. You know, you see tortoises clawing at the door, or pushing down doors, trying to get through. Iguanas scratching their way through the, you know, it is hard. I mean, when it comes to dangerous animals, I think that my love of nature and my innate experience with them, my knowledge, I would say I'm more afraid of them than most people are because I know more about them. Mm. But at the same time, I respect them at an incredibly high level. If an animal is pooping in a cage, I'm not just going to be too afraid to go in there. It needs to be cleaned. If we have that animal, then we've got to do everything we can to keep it in good health. And when I was talking about a sacrifice on the animal's behalf, if they're going to make that sacrifice, I'm going to make the sacrifice too. I'll stand alongside them.
Have you ever had a really challenging situation with an animal as far as danger yourself?
Yeah, you could say that.
Yeah.
I mean, you're constantly dodging attacks. And, I mean, these big snakes, people think that, when they're that big and weigh 300 pounds, the size of a basketball and girth, they can't move fast. Need to read a book on snakes. The bigger they are, the faster they move.
See, these animals are wild animals, and that's what we constantly try and tell people, you know, that
you cannot tame them.
They're hardwired to act in a certain way, and they're either defending or they're acting aggressively. They're not going to become tame, and we get a lot of people who drop their animal off when they're going to get a baby, say, or after they've been bit, you know, and they just don't understand that it's not a kitten, it's not a puppy.
And most people don't realize that the money that they're spending in these pet stores is going directly to the black market. It's supporting the trade. You buy bearded dragon, well, how are you going to feed it? Of course, you got to go and buy crickets and mealworms and things like that, these bugs, from where? The pet shop. And when you go, I mean, there's people that I've met that end up giving us iguanas that really, they went into the pet store to buy goldfish, but they're sold on everything. I mean, not only are you going to buy this $300 aquarium that is really unsuitable for this animal, but of course it looks big while the animal's a baby, you're also suckered into buying all the lights and the this and the that's and the books that these people have that don't make any sense. Oftentimes when I tell people, look, if you're going to learn about these animals, go to a bookstore and find something on that kind of animal. Don't go to the pet store that says this is how you do it, because I don't think anybody really knows how to keep wild animals in captivity. I think that we just do the best that we can and try and understand their instincts a little bit more every day that you work with them. I mean, it's a constant learning battle, you know.
So what is the frame of mind of a person, as I had an experience of meeting, whose son seemed to enjoy giving the mice to the boa?
I think a lot of people.
What's going on?
It's interesting. I think, like, for me, when I was a little boy, my first experience with a reptile was with a venomous snake back home in England. And I'd caught the snake because it was eating a frog, and that wasn't okay with me. The frog was actually screaming. Little did I know it had already been envenomated and probably took two steps and died. But I couldn't stand it watching it scream, so I helped it. And luckily enough, I never got bitten by it, and I brought it home. And the next time, I was told by my mother at a very early age, about 4 years old, don't catch them. Bring them home. They're wild animals. Leave them alone, let alone that this was a dangerous animal. I had no idea. But then, of course, after I'd saved the frog, I thought, neat. This is, you know, I'll just bring it home. Well, I didn't know anything. I was a child. I mean, that's why we call us children, is when we can't look after ourselves. That's why I disagree with children being given animals that live for 20 years that they don't know anything about, or a nocturnal little leopard gecko. But see, some people, they think it's neat. I was told that you leave it alone. So the next time in my grandma's backyard that I saw this adder come through the grass, I thought, okay, I'm not supposed to touch it. I'm not supposed to. And I learned that it was dangerous, too, so, of course, I didn't touch it. And this time I watched as it shot up, and then it went again. And then the third sort of real quick slither, whatever you want to call it, that it made, it had another frog. It bit the frog, and this time I watched it, and the first thing I saw was amazing, was the way that they walk their mouth. It's one side, then the other. And they walk all the way up from the back of the frog all the way to the front. Now, the first time I'd gone to help the frog, and I felt awful. It was screaming, how dare you, snake? I'm going to save this frog, you awful thing. The next time, I was absolutely blown away, fascinated. I looked at this, I thought, wow, my mom was right. She told me, if you watch, you'll learn something. Boy, did I ever learn something. I had no idea snakes' fangs were or teeth were used like arms, you know, like climbing apparatus.
Now, earlier you spoke about the legislation that would maybe, if it came into being, would restrict the importation of these exotic animals. But it really rests to target the pet stores. And have you done anything with that?
Yeah, over the years there's been a lot of work to canvas the Lower Mainland and see what's going on, what's being sold. I mean, softshell turtles here in Chinatown is a real tragic story. They're sold as live food. They're chopped up right in front of the customer on the street. I disagree with that. I mean, in 1996, there were permits issued that in order to, I believe, import or export, or basically anything to do with these turtles, you had to have this paperwork. Not one of those permits has ever been sold. And that was in 1996. That's 10 years ago.
And it's a restricted item.
Yeah.
Turtles. Everybody loves turtles.
Well, actually, speaking of turtles, I mean, you've got endangered species coming in with import, export. There was a guy in Yarrow, out in Chilliwack here, who's a second-time offender who got caught with endangered species in his glove box.
Mm-hmm. And so I saw this morning that turtles eat fish, frogs, crayfish, snails, and young waterfowl.
Basically,
I mean,
anything that they can find, they can overpower.
Anything like that for them on a natural basis. And as you said before, no person can exactly duplicate their needs in captivity.
That's
right. It's a totally faulty premise.
Yes.
Unacceptable.
And we're allowing people, and like kids,
people
and off the street.
It if we put the message across. So thank you for being here and letting us know the amount of surplus, the extent of this trade. And I believe Vancouver, after New York, is the second largest port.
Yes.
For exotics.
It's a
right through here.
What we often say, and there's a saying that goes for that, is that Vancouver, BC, most people that walk into a refuge are never ready for this. They say, oh, really? I'm amazed at how many people are ignorant to. I mean, we're dealing, ignorance is a very key word in this conversation, because that's what we're dealing with. We are dealing with a major ignorance here. Canadians are not bad people. We just have no idea what we're doing. Our ambition is to teach everyone.
But the law in this case is also an ass, isn't it? Because it allows anyone to import any kind of animal into this country.
I mean, you've got Canada, all our native species here, like specifically in British Columbia. You're not allowed to own crows. You're not even allowed to use nets in waterways, yet they sell them in all the dollar stores. There's no signage. You see kids catching eels and frogs with nets in the ponds and rivers. You're not allowed to own any Canadian native species, I believe. Now, maybe I'm wrong. There may be a few here. But you're not allowed to own those pets, basically, and that goes for the majority of Canadian wildlife. Then why on earth would we allow people to have man-eating pythons? I mean, you've got Florida Everglades. Down in Florida right now is a real problem. They've actually, in the last 2 years, pulled out over 150 Burmese pythons. There was a case where I'm sure some people out there have heard about the alligator that was found inside a dead Burmese python. These are two endangered species that are met in a clash that was created by man. You know, I want people to realize that this problem is a lot bigger than I can ever put into words.
And since you don't need to have permits for many of the animals that come in, there's no clear numbers, and some of the estimates that I've read is
no licensing.
We're bringing in about 100,000 reptiles into Canada per year, just based on what we can see, the tip of the iceberg. And any time you're bringing in animals, you have to sort of guesstimate that half of them are wild-caught. And wild-caught animals, you know, they typically 30% don't survive transportation. And in the first year, you lose 90%. So 10% of whatever
disease
come in,
are brought in
die.
What about the airlines? Can they help? Refuse such cargo.
They're involved in shipping. It's illegal. It is illegal cargo, and for animals that are threatened or endangered, if you have the CITES paperwork, you can still bring them in. You need a permit to leave the country, and you'll need a permit to enter the new country. But it's not really that difficult.
I think if the sale was outright banned, I mean, that's what I would like to see, is Canada stand up against this war on wildlife and create a national ban. Maybe even BC first, to show all of Canada, hey, you know, we can do it. But until that happens, maybe some licensing. Maybe if you own a man-eating python, people around you should have the right to know about that. They show up in people's backyards. Children are killed by Burmese pythons. Even full-grown men. There was a fellow down in Denver that was wrapped up by a small Burmese python. This is as thick as a man's arm and about 9 feet long. And it took six firefighters and two police officers to get the snake off the guy who had already died by asphyxiation. He was crushed to death.
Now, could I just interrupt for a moment? We need to have a station break. And our guests today are Marvin Moot and Paul Springate, I'm sorry, from the Rainforest Reptile Refuge in Surrey. And we'll get back to them very shortly. You are listening to CFRO 102.7 on your FM dial, Vancouver's only cooperative, independent, commercial-free radio station.
Serves the interest of the wealthy. It is their system.
Stark Raven, Mondays at 7 p.m.
Radical Radio on the People's Station.
CFRO 102.7 FM.
You better not put my son in jail. I'll take this country down.
Hello, we're back on Animal Voices once again with our two guests, Marvin and Paul from the Rainforest Reptile Refuge Rescue Society. I'm sorry, I get that all mixed up. But now we had a call in during the intermission, and someone wanted the gentleman to speak about feeding animals to animals, so I'm going to start with that.
Okay, well, there's definitely a couple sides to this. Looking at this as a professional, it's hard. Upon fascination is in the beginning. I was 4 years old when I saw a snake eat a frog. I've seen that happen many times now, and I think that the word to use is that people get quite sadistic about it. They think it's neat, and the people have pythons. Hey, let's watch what happens when you throw a rabbit in the cage. We don't do that. We do not feed live animals. We have to raise our own rodents in order to supply our snakes and lizards with food. Mm-hmm. And the last thing we want to do is see these animals raised in this environment and then thrown in Satan's lair. It's not right. You cause all sorts of problems. You're teaching, like our giant retic. If I was to feed that animal live, sadistic or not, we'd be teaching a 24-foot python how to hunt, and that is extremely dangerous for me. I don't particularly want to end up on the inside of her, but it's a very realistic threat. People don't realize that what you have to do is you're supposed to kill the animal before you feed it. If you give a rat to a snake, and the snake might not be hungry, and the rat's scared, it realizes that there's a threat here, and the rat bites the snake. Well, if the snake's like a ball python from West Africa, the bacteria in British Columbia's air is enough to kill it. And you have that sort of, and that's a horror story. We have a lot of animals come in that have been half eaten by their prey. It's not enjoyable. Public that have never seen it, people get grossed out by it, but I think it is a real problem that the larger animals like crocs, what are people feeding them? What are they doing? What are people doing in their apartment? You know, one time we had a story with a snapping turtle that we were told by this wonderful person that that he was feeding it kittens, or he tried to feed it kittens. You know, winning absolutely no, you know, favors from us. But this is what we're allowing by allowing people to have these animals.
See, these animals, they've been yanked out of their ecosystem where they're a perfect fit with there's a balance, you know, and we're hauling these animals up here to Canada. And we're kind of caught in a rather awkward situation where we're feeding,
and I myself
feeding animals, I have to
put down our rodents in order to feed the snakes, and I will tell you it's bothered me for 6 years. It's a necessity, unfortunately. I mean, I love all animals, including rats. They're one of the world's greatest survivors. Yeah. But at the same time, I have a job to do, and I have animals to keep alive in order to educate the public. But no, it's not a good feeling. Some people actually, this is the learning curve. Some people can't kill the rat, so they throw it in live. They're not sadistic, but then they cause the problem by doing that. We actually had a woman who called me a little while ago and insisted that because she had rescued two boas, and if we weren't going to take them, I mean, these are snakes that grow 9, 10 feet. We have three of them who are 6 feet long. We can't take more. She says, well, if we're not going to take them, then you should be supplying me with the rats. And I thought, well, I don't know about that. You know, I sit here and I'm raising these animals. We raise like hundreds of them at a time, at all times. It's a little bit hard. It goes into the public's expectations of what we do again, right?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to interrupt there. We're not going to get the final remarks we would like to have on the show. And Marvin, perhaps you would talk to the audience a little bit about the financing of the shelter.
Well, you know that we like to keep it warm, and we really appreciate donations. But just to give people an idea, our gas bill for January was $694. It cost us about $2,000 a month just to feed all the animals. Lighting, we use a lot of specialized light bulbs. People don't realize it, but reptiles need a full range of light, UVB rays, and so on. So, you know, we can spend up to $100, $150 in light bulbs. There's all those kinds of expenses, and we let people know just so that they think about it in case they're thinking of getting a reptile, but we certainly rely on donations to cover those kinds of costs.
And that's what you rely totally on, donations.
Yeah, and I do a lot of the deposits, so I see a lot of the checks and so on. And we don't get the big checks from Jimmy Pattison. We get the checks from retired people, you know, small donors who give us $10 or $20 a month,
maybe the people that are breeding pythons and bearded dragons would like to drop off a donation.
I don't see those.
Yeah, what about the pet stores?
That's right. I mean, they are causing this problem, and there is a job to do. I mean, hey, you know, I work 70 hours a week on these animals. I know there's a heck of a job to do. But the financial side of it is, yes, we need everybody's help out there. Anybody that, I mean, anything. These animals are not going anywhere anytime soon. Spud is 7 years old, will live to 120. He needs all the help he can get. You know, like I said before, is that we can clean the cages, we can keep them clean, we can change light bulbs, but we can't do everything.
Thank you both for being here. Now, would you mind giving us the information on how to get more information if people are interested?
Well, we have a wonderful website, and we invite everyone to visit it. It's reptilerefuge.ca. It's all lowercase. And it's quite extensive, and we get hits from all around the world. In fact, it's funny, we get people calling us from Europe and from the East Coast of the United States, asking us questions, asking us for advice, and not realizing that we're way over here in Vancouver, and they cannot bring their red-eared slider turtle over to us.
reptilerefuge.com, did you say?
reptilerefuge.ca. We are located at 1395 176th Street, so just on the way to the Pacific border crossing.
Right down by White Rock, South Surrey.
Our phone number, we are open Saturday and Sunday afternoons for public viewing, and we usually have some tour guides there. Our phone number is 604-538-1711.
Is organic fruit of any use to you?
Absolutely.
Oh, yes.
I got a big bag full of donating today.
Excellent. We get people dropping off. They clean out their freezer, and they bring us Look at that. That's
oranges
wonderful.
And bananas.
The animals, we have quite a number of the animals that are vegetarian, and tropical fruits go over really well.
And they love bananas.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, I feel good.
Oh, that's great. I'm going to have to cut in now. I'm sorry, but this is the absolute end because we do have to get another interview on here. But thank you so much, both to...
And if anybody out there wants to buy a reptile, do your research.
Yeah, and thank you so much for having us.
You're welcome,
thank you.
We would like to have you back.
Soon.
You've been listening to an interview with Marvin Moot, the president of the Rainforest Reptile Refuge Society, and Paul Springgate, I wish I could get that right, and he's the curator of the rescue